Hello, and welcome to Comfortably Unnumb, the official podcast of the Umbrella Society. My name is Blake Anderson. I am still the program's manager here at the Umbrella Society, and I am still the host of this program, coming to you today from beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin-speaking people. And what a beautiful day it is in Victoria. It's finally starting to feel like spring. I feel like there's that thaw that has come almost overnight. And what a difference that makes, at least to me, for my mood and my mental health. I was getting on my bike this morning and this amazing sunrise was coming up and just put into perspective how lucky I am and we are to be living in such a beautiful part of the world. So yeah, absolutely love this time of year. It has been a little bit longer than I expected to get out my next installment of Comfortably Unnumb, but that is the world of not-for-profit. Things get busy and it's this feast or famine. So either, you know, things are kind of at a bit of a standstill or it's at a frenetic pace. So we've just been playing a little bit of catch up, but really happy to come out with a few podcasts today and in a few weeks to come. And today I'm incredibly excited about our guest. This is an individual that I had the pleasure of walking along beside in his recovery journey. You know, when I was the housing manager at Foundation House and at our third stage houses. Nick is on the program today. You know, what a character Nick is. This man has boundless energy and just has this infectious positivity that really impacts and rubs off on everybody that he works with. And beyond that, you know, boundless energy, there really is some wisdom and you know, just a real solid human underneath all that as well. So really happy to have Nick on the program. Nick actually you know, a couple years ago decided to change careers and came to the field and has been working with Umbrella. He was working as an outreach worker and is now part of our intensive case management team. So not only is he an excellent person, he is you know, a real model employee and you know, really doing Umbrella you know, a lot of justice and you know, representing us well in the community. So I'm really happy to have Nick on the program today. Okay, Nick. It's so good to have you in here, man. Yeah, we've gone back a ways. Actually, you were, you know, in our program and in the houses when I first started at Umbrella. So, yeah. I think, the first time I met you was, good six and a half years ago, I would think. Hey,
yeah, six and a half, even.
Yeah, maybe.
About seven, maybe even longer. Yeah, yeah, maybe seven.
Yeah. Anyways,
it's a good amount of time.
It's amazing to see how far you come, and like I said, we were so thrilled that you're now part of the Umbrella team. And I remember having a couple meetings with you when you were, you know, doing landscaping and thinking about joining this field.
Yeah.
And now you've jumped in and doing such an amazing job with us. And so yeah, I've had you on the back burner to come on in and share your story. And I just felt, you know what, now's time to get a little Nick into the mix. So yeah,
perfect.
Thanks so much for taking the time, buddy.
Yeah.
Right on.
I'm into it.
So, listen, I always, you know, like sharing the story kind of and getting the scope of it and digging back a little bit and seeing where addiction and substances kind of came into your life and,
yeah.
You know, what that backstory was, you know, for you. Yeah, what was your experience in the early days when it comes to substances, and how did that first kind of come onto the scene for you?
Yeah, for me, I think I was probably 11 or 12, and my older brother was hanging out with some people that, you know, might have been from the wrong side of the tracks a little bit. Mm. So we were downtown by the Whale Wall.
Right.
And I don't know how interested I was in the stuff, but he's like, here's a joint, smoke it. So anyways, my twin brother and I, we did a lot of stuff together. So he might be brought up in my story a little bit.
Right.
But we ended up smoking marijuana.
Yeah.
And that time, I think at that time, I really enjoyed it.
Right.
It was something that just kind of made me feel relaxed, and New York fries never tasted so good
right.
as that one day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, from there, I hung out with a lot of people who kind of were doing that same kind of stuff.
Right.
And I would eventually start skipping school in junior high and not making class, but I would always keep my grades up.
Right. So you can kind of get by, but there was kind of shades of this other lifestyle that was starting to present itself. Yeah. And it's got to be hard too when it's being modeled by your older brother and kind of encouraged by your older brother, and you've got your twin brother to kind of go along for the ride with you, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I just kind of took charge and realized that at the time I really liked that, and then started getting into like drinking on weekends, partying with friends, and it wasn't too bad in junior high. And then, I don't know, a few times doing a little bit of psychedelics. Yeah, going on like little nature walks and things like that. At that point, I don't feel it was too terrible.
And it's really hard to, where, you know, we always kind of talk about this. When you're in those years, it's like there's this, you know, just a young teen like exploration, and like everyone else around you is kind of doing it. And there's not really that like measuring stick of, hey, is this a problem or is this not, right? You're just kind of, right, doing it, having fun, being a kid.
Yeah.
Trying shit, right. Okay.
For sure. Yeah. And then just, I think, so then a lot of that in junior high. And I think it could have stemmed, I don't know, my mom and my dad got broken up, like, ended their relationship when I was about 10, and I took them splitting up really hard.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's why I went to drugs. It's still kind of, you know, I think recovery is a lifelong process myself. Okay. So I was going to, so then I got into high school, and I never like went to raves. But sometimes hanging out with certain people did like MDMA.
Right.
It's okay to mention like different drugs on them.
Oh, yeah, of course,
Okay. I know I'm not like in an NA meeting or anything. That's right. You're not supposed to say like the name of the drug.
No, it's all good. It's all good. It's your story.
Okay. So, yeah, I would do that, and then we would go to parties. And then I kind of realized that it wasn't for me. Because after that, I would feel really down and depressed for like 2 or 3 weeks. So that part didn't last too long.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So you're trying like that, the party drugs, but the down. So it was tangible that you realized like, hey, this is not what I'm looking for.
And MDMA is not for me.
Right.
No. It depleted my system or something. I don't know.
Right.
It wasn't good. So from there, I did okay in grade 11 and 12, but my grades started slipping and I wasn't paying as much attention in school, and sometimes missing school, but not too often. I would just, I don't know, as well, I was talking a lot in class.
Okay.
I found it hard to sit still.
Right. Yeah.
So,
I can see that. Yeah.
I was always trying to sit in the back of the class.
Right.
And played the role of the class clown a little bit. Loved art class, loved PE and gym. Like, right. I still kept fit in that. And then, yeah, I guess but in grade 11 and 12, I only played one sport. I played rugby 1 year because I was partying too much. And
so all of a sudden the priorities are starting to shift a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I graduated high school, and then after that, my brother and my friend were hanging out a lot.
This is your older brother or your twin brother?
My twin brother.
Twin brother, okay.
So my older brother was mostly when we were young. Right. We didn't really, and then we kind of went our own ways.
Gotcha.
And then I was like, why are you guys hanging out so much? What's going on?
Right.
And then it turned out
that they were doing cocaine.
Okay.
So we ended up hanging out and driving around to all hours of the night. And like right. I started
right.
using with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Did that kind of shift for you as far as like, you know, kind of lifestyle, or like, was this just more of an appealing substance for you then?
At that time it felt,
yeah.
Yeah. It felt appealing. My boss at the time was one of my mom's friends. I think he might have noticed something,
right. But
I don't think he ever said anything to my parents or anything like that.
Okay.
But yeah, I would always be, because I was working sheet metal at the time, and I would be staying up for all hours. It probably was not a good situation.
Right.
So,
so the cracks start to show a little bit, right? Right.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. My life started going a little haywire, and then I was selling marijuana, mm-hmm. and then eventually I got busted for that, which was kind of a blessing in disguise, because it gave me, I got a curfew.
Okay.
Yeah. For 10 o'clock. And then I couldn't have any weed on me. So at this point, I kind of slowed down on like drugs and stuff for a little while.
Right.
I think I was like 23-ish. So I had a curfew. And then I got caught with weed again. But the cop just threw that away.
Okay.
Because he's like, I think you're a good guy.
Right. You okay. Know, you, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like
he wasn't wanting. Yeah. Yeah. To penalize you. Right. Mm-hmm. Especially at that, like back in the day. Yeah. It's different now with, you know, something like weed. Right. But back in the day,
yeah.
If you'd already been busted, that would have been some serious
mm-hmm.
ramifications.
Especially like for the purpose of sales or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So I did some community service at Swan Lake, and it was actually kind of fun and nice doing that. And then that I did the community service was on seeing a bail supervisor, not like a probation officer, whatever. I don't know the difference. And then, all that got dropped and I got a conditional discharge. So it didn't actually become a charge.
Okay.
Which I was very lucky.
Right.
And then, yeah, shortly after that, I started dabbling in some other stuff. I started using cocaine again a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was 24. It was 24. I think it was later 23 or 24. I tried smoking heroin for the first time.
Mm.
And my friend I used with, I didn't watch too many like drug movies or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize it was heroin
right.
and she thought it was opium. So for the first while when I was using it, I actually thought it was just opium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was about 4 months later that the guy I started buying from was like, do you know what you're doing? I was like, oh yeah, it's opium, whatever, right? Like I'm smoking dragons,
right, right, doing, right.
And then he's like, no, you're smoking heroin. And by that time,
right,
yeah, I was kind of enjoying it too much.
Right, the grips were sinking in a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I had the monkey on my back.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that's. Probably when things started going more awry in my life.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. So when things got real serious, right. So before there was like little indicators that, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing it, but this is like, yeah, a whole different level. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And while that you didn't even realize what you were taking.
Not right away.
That's no. Okay. Right.
And then I realized like obviously later on in my life, how naive I was at that time.
Sure.
Like hugely. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, it was my twin brother and I were just using together. We were great friends, but we were like, fire and water almost.
Okay.
Like at that time, right. We mixed so well, like friendship and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But when it came to using, we both had like,
so there was we were addicts. There was no conscientious objector going like, hey, but we better scale this back or right.
No.
So you guys were in it together and kind of right.
And
perfect. Right. Perfect wingmen for each other.
It was terrible.
Right. Right. You see that in like relationships too, right? Like, you know, where it's like just too similar a personality, right? And nobody to put the brakes on. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and then also having someone to use with and kind of, right.
Yeah.
So this is the two of you that have gone down this rabbit hole with smoking heroin. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were smoking for a number of years. And then I managed to finish my first 2 years of sheet metal and I actually did really well. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my third year and I was using pretty like heavy, close to daily using at this time. And I couldn't handle it.
Mm.
But I didn't want to say to like anybody what was going on.
Right.
So like my parents, so I called my mom and then said, I can't do this. It's too stressful. So I was saying how stressful it was and stuff like that.
You're saying like, but putting it in the terms of school?
School.
School's too stressful. Yeah. Right. Not putting any backstory of what's actually going on. Okay.
No. So there's no backstory. So I ended up talking to a counselor and talking to my mom. I was like crying in a bathroom because I was too stressed out. And then I ended up leaving after like a week of third year. And then I did sheet metal for a little bit longer. And then I thought it was a great idea to do ventilation cleaning with my twin brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So
now all of a sudden you're together 24/7.
Yeah. Okay. We're on two different trucks, but we're traveling to work together.
Right.
Traveling home. And it just takes off in a pretty raw way, like pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like it's every day we don't want to say we're still bullshitting. We're living in my dad's basement suite.
Okay.
And we're having like a few people over here and there. And then, but I don't know if you call it like a closet user.
Mm.
I didn't want people to know.
Right. This wasn't out in the open. This is no. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
No. We would sometimes go to the Fox with people cause it was just down the road. Like on the V Lounge and play pool and hang out
right.
and drink, but drinking wasn't really my thing.
Right.
If I ever had a beer, I went straight to straight to drugs.
Right.
And then weed kind of went on the back burner cause it started making me too paranoid around 28. So I realized that this is what I want to do.
This is your DOC. Yeah.
This is my main. Yeah. Yeah. DOC. Yeah, right. Totally. So yeah, eventually we were living in my dad's basement suite and it was pretty cheap rent. And then I think eventually it wasn't me. It was my brother eventually said something to my dad, which started things kind of towards a bit of a different trajectory.
So was he like, man, we need help? Or was he more just like, let it slip that there's some shit was going down?
No, my dad was not stoked about it.
Right. Okay. So
he's like, He's like, no, you guys need help. So what happened was my mom stayed with us for a week.
Okay.
In the basement suite, even though my parents are separated, yeah, right?
But she came in to
make sure. So I got so sick, and it was just nasty. And I swore I'll never use again. This pain is not worth it, right?
Right. So basically, she came in to detox you too.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, she stayed there, took a week and a bit off work, I believe, or something. And it was hell. It was just like, ugh. Anybody who's gone through the detox knows. Like, right. You just, your whole body just burns, and it's a nasty scene.
Right.
But at my dad's basement suite, we started work, going back to work and stuff like that. And then eventually my brother tried this Christian thing called Teen Challenge.
Okay.
Like a Christian recovery kind of program.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah. Okay. Where is that? That's in...
There was a center up in Cowichan Lake.
Oh, okay.
So he went up there. And now there's one in Kelowna.
That's right. There's Kelowna one.
And one in Yarrow or Chilliwack. Chilliwack, okay. Yarrow.
Yeah.
So it's working really well for him.
Right.
I'm still at home. And I'm still doing my thing.
Okay, so right. Yeah. How long? So did it last? You detox for a week as soon as your mom left.
For a week, and then my right mom's back gone. To it? And then she started saying, like, she's like, things are getting a little fishy. Like, I'm gonna and I started. I moved out on my own, and I started dating this girl, and she had no idea what was going on.
Right.
And was that before? I don't know. Like, my timeline might be a little bit
right.
off. That was before I think we told my mom what was going on.
Okay.
And then she, I eventually tried Teen Challenge too.
Okay.
And I was there for about 4 months, and then I left, came back to Victoria, started using again and all that.
Right.
And then I went back to Teen Challenge.
Okay. So right.
And then, so I'm there and we're learning about like the Bible and getting biblical and whatever.
Right.
And, it's, I don't know. There's lots of good messages and things like that. And it's not, I don't know. There's just things that I'm okay with. And then things that don't jive with me.
Sure.
And they're always telling me like I'm asking, so how do I maintain this. like stay clean when I leave here?
Right.
And they're like, oh, give it to God. And then,
okay, what does that look
then,
like?
And then I'm like, so what does that look like? They're like, okay, pray and stuff like that.
Right.
So they didn't promote anything except for their program.
Right.
Give it to God. And there wasn't a lot much more.
So basically you're coming out of treatment without a real substantial post-treatment plan.
Totally.
Which, I mean, we see all the time when that happens to, it's so, you can feel so defeated because you're spending all this time working on yourself and then you come back and reality hits you in the face. You're not protected from that transition. And then ultimately that relapse happens. You're like, oh my God, I'm never going to get this. Right. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Right. But at the end of the day, it just was just not enough planning, not sufficient enough planning to protect yourself transitioning back into community.
There's nothing.
Right.
There's nothing. Right. So, my girlfriend and I, she moved to Chilliwack and started working as a nurse Agassiz started working as a nurse, and I moved with her, and then eventually I started working at this manufacturing place, and it was going pretty good. And then my twin brother's up in the Kelowna Teen Challenge.
Okay.
He gets transferred to the BC Teen Challenge.
Right.
And then he ends up with one of, like, he's working there at this time.
Okay.
But with one of the clients, they started doing their thing together.
Okay.
Yeah. And then
he's like, okay, let's go to, there's a big arcade there that's kind of cool with bump, with like go-karts and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then he's like, oh, let's go to Castle Fun Park. That's what it's called. Right. I'm like, okay, right on, let's go. And then he lets me know what's been going on.
Right.
And then at that point that day, I don't use.
Right.
And then we go to Castle Fun Park again. And then he asked again a few times, and then I give in.
Right. Okay.
So I went back.
This is too strong. Right. Brother's too persuasive of a person in your life.
It was just.
Okay.
And then, I think eventually he, I guess, got caught while he was over there.
Right.
From the staff. So he moved back to Victoria.
Okay.
So now I'm just in, and my girlfriend and I, we split up a little bit before this because of what I'm doing.
Sure.
And then I'm out in Chilliwack just trying to work away, still kind of dabbling here and there, and it's not working.
Right.
So eventually I call my dad up and I'm like, look, if I stay out here, I'm probably going to die.
Okay.
Like things are getting bad.
Yeah,
they're getting terrible. So from there, my dad helps me gather all my stuff and put it into storage. And then I move back to Victoria. I think I'm living with my dad at this point. And then I guess my brother and I start using again.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm using again. And then, so I'm living actually upstairs in my dad's place at this point. And then my dad kicks my brother out of the house. And then he ends up staying over at Rock Bay Landing.
Okay.
And then he's like, if you're not going to change. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I ended up staying on a mat at Rock Bay Landing and getting a bed.
Okay.
So
both you guys
are both there.
You're both there. Okay. Yeah.
And then after a week or a week and a half to 2 weeks, I'm like, oh, shit. This is not what the life I want to live.
Right. It's, that kind of puts it right into focus. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think maybe my parents, without knowing it, were enabling a little bit.
Sure.
Which it is what it happens, is, right?
Yeah. It happens. It's always usually for the best of intentions, right?
Yeah.
With the best of intentions, yeah.
So it was like a blessing in disguise ending up at Rock Bay Landing. Because from there... So
that's your wake-up call.
Yeah,
from there. I got to take care of this.
I think I talked to a social worker there, and she got me on the list for detox.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I ended up going to detox first. And then in detox, I met Chris, who used to work for Umbrella.
Right.
And he's like, I think you'd be a good fit for maybe one of our places in the future. Let's try to get you on the stabilization and maybe the Grove kind of route.
Right. Trying to do some supportive recovery through Island Health and see where you're at, and then maybe kind of move over to Umbrella Houses. Is that kind of the,
right? That's kind of like he told me about his journey a little bit.
And sure.
Stuff. And I said, okay, that sounds pretty cool.
Right.
So from there, I did stabilization, and I was at the Grove for a while. The Grove was all right. It was pretty good. I just found it, like, the structure was good. I think it was just there was four guys, and I wasn't jiving as much with them.
Right.
And then I had an opportunity to go to Foundation House.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got to Foundation House and started met Evan, Charlene, and a few other I think I met Bronwyn maybe mm-hmm. first.
Sure.
And then she did like my intake or whatever when the office was over.
Right on Quadra or whatever. Yeah, like, Kings Road. Yeah.
Yeah, right. A while back. And then I ended up at Foundation House and I met lots of great people there.
Right.
Like, yeah. I met...
Yeah, met some real characters, and right.
Yeah, and then
so this is where you start getting some lasting friendships in recovery.
Yeah,
and really building this recovery community here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's a different that's a different vibe.
It's a whole different ballgame because when I was in stabilization and the Grove, I started going to like NA, AA meetings, SMART meetings, and I built like a pretty, like a good solid community.
Right.
But, when I was at Foundation, as I think you might know, I did have, I think I had a slip there, and then maybe down the road a little bit, I ended up using a few times, not like out coming back in not a good way to the house.
Right.
And then I think I ended up going to stabilization again for like 20 days or so, or 15 days.
So even though you're in that, you were, not quite at that point. So you're back at stabe. Right. Yeah.
And then I go to Cooper.
Right. So that's our third stage house. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was at Cooper for a while.
Yeah.
I was pretty good there.
I think that's where I met you. Yeah. There was a real brotherhood kind of going on at that point.
Yeah.
When you're there, right?
Yeah.
Real cohesiveness with the three other fellows.
Fully, right. And then I think I was doing pretty well, and then I had like a really bad relapse where I was so sick. And I ended up going to the sobering center. And then from there, I did a little refresher at Foundation House.
That's right.
And then I met some of the other guys who actually ended up, like some of them ended up starting to work for Umbrella for Umbrella today.
That's right.
So it was really nice. It was almost, I don't know if it was a blessing to have that happen. After using that one time, I felt sick for 5 to 7 days.
Right. I think I remember you saying that it's like this is not the same drugs you were, right? Like the landscape had changed since when you were using last, right?
Yeah. This is
scary.
This is pretty, like fentanyl started getting introduced a little bit before that. But then I think there's more and more fentanyl out at this time. Right. This is 5.5 years-ish ago,
right,
somewhere around there. And then it just kicked my ass. And I ended up, I had a family gathering or something the next day, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna stay in my car, because I had to leave the house for a bit. And then after that, I think, I had a family gathering that I had to go to, and I was like just out of sorts and just looked like shit. And my mom said something to me. Did something happen? Like, what's going on? And I was like, I can't talk to you right now. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom allowed me to stay at her place for a week. Then I went back to F House for that refresher we were talking about.
Right.
And then started hitting way more meetings again and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I remember going for a walk with you when you kind of came back to Foundation House, and I think there was something that had changed. I think that there was, like you say, sometimes there's kind of blessings in disguise, you know, and it seemed like all of a sudden you were a lot more serious about your recovery. Like, I think you were doing your recovery, but it seemed like the degree of seriousness, you kind of turned it up a notch, and there was a little bit of a more sense of like, okay, like this, I know what I need to do and this is what I'm going to do. The more conviction behind your recovery, maybe.
And I remember that. I remember that walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we were talking that day, something clicked, and it just helped me realize that that's not what I want.
Right.
Right. It's not the life I want to live. I don't want to be remembered as just an addict and be, I don't want to be, I don't know if I should call it a statistic. I don't want to be someone who passes away from using drugs, because that was the trajectory.
Right.
So yeah, I started getting more serious, and I was doing landscaping. It was going well. I kept going to my meetings, connecting with my sponsor, and reaching out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was pretty crazy the shift that happened there.
Right.
In a good way.
Right.
So
you put in the time, and I forget kind of what the end trajectory was after that, for how much longer you stayed in our housing program.
I think I stayed at, so after Foundation House, I was there for about 4 months-ish, and then I went back to Cooper.
Right.
And then I was at Cooper for a while, and then COVID hit.
Right.
And I ended up staying at my girlfriend's house.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. And then you kind of realized, this could work.
Yeah. So I stayed there for a while. And then after the COVID started getting less, I would come back for the meetings.
Mm.
And then eventually I ended up moving out and living with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then that's kind of, from Cooper to there.
Right.
And then.
Yeah. And then you were kind of working landscaping for a good chunk of time. And I remember, I think you had injured yourself. And I remember you reached out to me. You were just kind of just dipping your toes into, like, hey, do you think, like, maybe this isn't the most sustainable line of work. And I think that was the first time that, like, at least we had a conversation about you entering the field.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of brought you to that conclusion that maybe that's the kind of line of work here might want to go towards? This is obviously when you're now getting some substantial recovery time under your belt. Yeah. And, right.
Yeah. So I had more years of recovery. So I felt ready to be able to help other people.
Right.
I didn't feel ready right when I, like, even a year after, I didn't really feel ready to jump into the field myself. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I always think early recovery, people think it's shorter than it is, it's like at least a couple of years, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Oh yeah. To
really solidify
yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still working on myself every day, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
Different way, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So I think I started realizing that I don't think the field I'm in is going to be sustainable much longer. And I thought, because before, when I was at Foundation, I was actually going to do the that program,
the mental health and addictions course, right?
So then I reached out to you and just checked if there's anything in the works or if you have any positions. And then I ended up going in with I did outreach for a while with Alex.
Yeah, that's right. You were doing, kind of in the trades outreach, but it was more just ended up being just general outreach.
Just general outreach, yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of got into that outreach role for a good while. And what was that like when, because you had an outreach worker yourself and you've gone through. Was it a weird experience being on the other side of the table, or the other side of the equation?
Yeah, it was rewarding.
Right.
In a way.
Yeah.
Because I could start, especially in the outreach line, I saw people moving forward in recovery.
Right.
And I was able to kind of follow their journey a little bit. If they were going to treatment and things like that.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was good. It was really great to see. And it's nice to be able to hear from others and kind of let them know that I've kind of been in their shoes.
Right.
So it helps them. I find it helped us be able to open up a bit better,
right,
and just have a good dialogue.
Right. And yeah, sometimes that's what people need, is that relatability piece. Like, mm-hmm, yeah, okay, this is possible and there, yeah, are ways around it. And, you know,
yeah,
yeah. So that's a really cool, yeah, must've been a real, you know, experience at first, kind of get into that role, but yeah, I remember you really got your stride with it. And it's you know, one of those roles where you have to find your own voice and your own style, right?
Yeah.
And figure out, okay, how much of my story am I going to use? How much of, you know, but so you, yeah, and then you've ended up now on this intensive case management team, which is really, you know, man, it's such a, for me, it's always blown me away, the organization of that team and you know, the level of coordination involved, but also working with some really, you know, challenging clientele that you know, might be more on the pre-contemplative side. And, you know, for somebody who's been through that whole thing and you know, has, you know, substantial recovery under your belt. Is it hard kind of having those conversations with people who might not want to make that change yet? Like, hey, there is another way to live, you know? How does that go for you?
So when I was doing the outreach with Umbrella, I would definitely be more engaging on like detox treatment and recovery afterwards,
right?
Be it like second stage or
outpatient,
maybe outpatient,
yeah,
or like somewhere along that line.
Right.
But now I will. It can be a bit hard to bring up with some of the clients. I will chat with them. And kind of, I'll give a bit of my backstory,
right,
and let them know that. Let them know recovery is possible.
Right.
It's not always easy, but it feels good to be away from the drugs,
right,
and to have a community now.
Right. Right.
Like when I was using, I was isolating a lot.
Right.
And now I have like a lot of people from like NA, right, mostly NA and AA,
yeah. Yeah.
And then a few other friends too. But
right,
the
connections that you pick up along the way,
yeah,
right? They're pretty substantial. Yeah,
yeah. I let them know that it can happen for them.
Right.
Like that. Like there's other options out there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, you know what? That's, I'm so glad that you brought that up. And that's always something. When I'm, you know, yeah, coaching people and, you know, working in parts of the field where you are dealing with people that are a little bit more pre-contemplative or maybe, mm-hmm, contemplative, but not really ready to make that big shift, is, you know, I think it's probably the least invasive way of planting those seeds is just to talk about options, just to know that there are options, even just making, hey, you don't need to take these, but no, just so you're aware, there are some paths that you can take.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the gentlest way to, you know, go about it. And you never know which conversation or maybe a series of conversations that might really pave the way for somebody to actually get the courage up to do something about it.
Totally.
And, you know, so, but yeah, I love that. I love that. Just making sure, yeah, there are options. It is possible. Just so you're aware, yeah, right? We don't need to go there, but yeah. That's great, man. I mean, so I always kind of ask this, like, you know, somebody who has gone through it and seen, you know, the dark sides of addiction and, you know, and now working in the field, is there anything that you can see like that, man, it would be really nice if our society or community, you know, had this or had more of this, or, you know, is there something that, you know, if you got on a soapbox that you would advocate for?
I'm just thinking about, okay, probably in Victoria, more detox beds.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, I'm not sure if this is where things might be moving, but
an option. So, right, because stabilization, I don't know if it has enough beds at this time. I just think an option after detox and more detox beds.
Yeah.
I think just not detox 7 days. And if the person's homeless, right out to the streets, right. Or just back to maybe a supportive housing location where it's okay, like where people are using all around. So a bit more maybe recovery based options.
You know what? It's fitting that you said that, you know, for me, whenever I'm given the opportunity to talk and I'm like, yeah, there's plenty of changes that I'd love to see. Mm-hmm. But if I had to pick one, let's go for the detox. Yeah. You know, if people could actually say, hey, I want to make a change, you go, okay, let's go in real time. You know, within a day, we can get you in there or just better access. Yeah. It's really hard to tell people to hold that thought, right? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, why don't we get back to you in 4 weeks' time after we go through this convoluted process to get you on the list? Now just wait for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or, you know, that's a tough place, right?
And that's the hardest part I find for some of the clients I'm working with now. And when I was doing the outreach role, is getting that first step to detox.
Right.
So, the contemplative stage.
Right.
And, it's awesome to see when things start working out for people. I'm even gonna, not all my clients would I suggest for umbrella groups at this time.
Yeah.
But the Nooner, I think.
Right.
Lots of people and, you know.
Just starting to kind of get.
Forward.
Yeah. No, and I'm glad that you brought up to that, like, you know, secondary piece, you know, that I always feel too, okay, we get somebody into detox. That is somebody who's going, I want to make a change in my life. I need to take a break from this. And being able to extend that for more than 7 days is so intricate. Like, these are people that are motivated. It takes a lot of motivation to just get through the doors of detox. Definitely. So we've actually done this. I'm with you. It's a bit of a lost opportunity to just go, all right, you know, back down to the block or back down to, you know, this really unhealthy living condition where using is going on all around. Yeah, well, that's a lost opportunity for somebody who's actually had the guts to say, I want to change, you know? And yeah, I'm definitely, you know, in agreement. If we could hold on to that momentum for longer, I think we'd see more success. Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of, the system doesn't just change.
Mm-hmm.
I think the bridging the gap between detox and second stage or treatment is where it'd be great to see some more.
Yes, like when it happens, when you have somebody where you get these seamless transitions where they get to go to detox, then to stabilization, then they get into treatment, and then they've got second stage waiting. I mean, that rarely happens, but when it does, man, that's a great success rate. You know, for my clients that actually got to do that trajectory, their level of success was way higher, right? But then when you're like, oh, I go to detox and I got to go home or go to the street for a few days and then I might get in here and then there's a 2 month wait and that that's too disjointed,
like,
right?
Like, just when I started getting into the outreach and working in the role I am now, I feel I'm very blessed about the trajectory, the way things went for me.
Right. Yeah.
I feel very, very fortunate.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So
when you see, that it's not every day that you can things line up for you like that. No. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it took a lot of work on your part, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. It's like when the stars aligned, it was, So you appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, last question for you. You know, let's say, you meet somebody who's either new to recovery or just on that precipice, you know, like they're ready to make that change and they're reaching out either at a meeting or whatnot for advice. What would you tell somebody? Like what would your message be I know that's kind of putting you on the spot. Yeah, you don't have to get too deep, but you know, yeah. What?
It's okay. If I'm seeing, if I meet someone, okay, we'll just go with at a meeting kind of thing. I see someone for, I don't know, for a second, or just are coming back. I would suggest probably use the phone list. Reach out.
Reach
out,
yeah.
Literature. And I don't know, this sounds very NA. But
right, yeah.
Probably maybe not right. Get some close recovery friends.
Right.
And eventually go for a sponsor and start working. I don't know. I think working a set of steps would be great.
Put in the work.
Yeah.
Right. So reach out, put in the work and build your support community essentially. Cause yeah.
Like for me, connection is the opposite of addiction.
Right.
So keep connecting.
That's right. Yeah. Nothing but good can come from that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
I don't know. Find something greater than like yourself, be it the group or whatever it may be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, that's amazing, man. Well, listen, I'm super proud of you. I'm proud to be a part of your journey in a small way and seeing how far you've grown and not just as a person, but as a professional and just in general, it's been a, yeah, real pleasure to see your trajectory, you know, and to see how much work you put in and seeing those moments of real discovery for yourself. And
totally.
And like you said, you know, I appreciate that you know, are still putting time into yourself. You still, you know, take your recovery seriously, you know, 5.5 years later after this journey. And, you know, it's great to see that you're still putting your recovery, you know, in that forefront. And yeah, you're doing great work in the community, too. So. Yeah. And thanks for taking the time to come onto the program, man. I know you're really busy. So I had to kind of just peel you away to, you know, to get this in, but I really appreciate you taking the time and I know it really will resonate for sure.
Definitely. Cool. I could just probably hit more meetings myself.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Than one a week at
right
this time.
On, right on. Hey, but you're still working it, man. That's great, brother.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks once again to Nick for coming onto the program. And sharing his story, I you know, a couple of things that struck me for sure is you know, just the family ties and you know, the influence that those around you may have on you. You know, the fact that Nick and his twin brother were so closely connected in their addiction, and then so closely connected and influencing in their recovery as well. You know, Nick didn't mention, but his brother is found long-term sobriety as well. And is, I believe, in his fourth year of sobriety. So, you know, really, really proud of Nick and all he's been able to accomplish, you know, and being in the field, you know, Nick just brings up for me, you know, just that common thread about more needed in detox and that early intervention when it comes to getting care and getting on top of someone's substance use. You know, every time I mentioned it, every time that I'm asked, you know, when I have the opportunity, what needs to change, you know, getting more substantial detox services and more fast acting detox services, better access, more comprehensive detox services is just so important. I really feel it's the way to start. And I say this over and over again too, it's going to mitigate the challenges that we're finding in our emergency rooms and our hospitals, because a lot of individuals who are not able to access detox end up in our hospitals. So for me, this is not even a financial issue. This is just something that needs to be done and will actually end up, I feel, saving our healthcare money if we invest in our detox services and also some stabilization services as well to extend people's time of sobriety. And that is when we see people, you know, really have that impetus to make that change, who really build momentum in their recovery. This might be somebody who's coming in for the first time, who wants to make a change and having the opportunity to piece together days upon days of sobriety. This is the perfect time. This is where we should be, you know, really manifesting a lot of our supports. So anyways, I'm always getting on my soapbox about that topic. Like I said, I feel this is the most tangible way. This is a very complex issue, but that is an incredibly tangible way to start seeing some change and some results, you know, in the situation that we have now. So anyways, enough of my opinions. Thank you once again to Nick. This is great to get back at it. And I've been loading up with a bunch of podcast interviews. We'd had some cancellations over the last few weeks, but now we are, you know, back on track. So I really should be able to get out another podcast in about 2 weeks' time. So fingers crossed for that. So long as nothing big changes in the meantime. So thank you for listening. Please spread the word. Please, you know, try to get these conversations going in our community. You know, recovery is possible if we give it a shot. You know, I would love to see more people having these conversations and getting to know, you know, the possibilities of recovery. So once again, from Umbrella Society, my name is Blake Anderson. I'll be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, stay safe.